My name is Mike Thornton. This is Full Logic Reverse. We hope you'll stay tuned. You're tuned to Community Supported Radio, KVMR, FM 89.5, 99.3, 103.7 on your FM radio dial. You may be listening on the internet somewhere on the face of the planet at www.kvmr.org. You may be listening at the one, the only, the home frequency, 89.5, booming out across Northern California, or one of our two translators, K257DM, serving Sacramento at 99.3 FM, and translator K279AE serving Auburn at 103.7 on your FM radio dial. Thanks to those of you who are listener supporters. You underwrite all hours of programming on this independent alternative media endeavor that is community radio. We appreciate the fact that you do that. We're going to be talking about education, and we're going to be talking and focusing, I'm sure, on something that I've heard referred to as social promotion. Our guest is Jim Meshward, who is the superintendent of the Pleasant Ridge School District. Jim, thank you for being with us this evening on the New Storm News Service.
Oh, my pleasure.
Well, we appreciate that you were able to be with us. Of course, we are, as always, co-hosted by Paul Emery. And Paul, I know education is a pretty favorite topic of yours, at least I believe it to be so.
Well, it certainly is. I am intrigued by the question of education to begin with, and what the proper role of government should be in that. That's a big question. Mm-hmm. Secondly, the question is, since government is involved in education, representing the public good, does it work? How well is this whole idea working? What else could be going on in the lives of these young people other than what's happening right now? And I think that's why this is a good topic tonight with the social promotion.
Chamberlain also remains with us into this segment as we move into the topic of education, and certainly we encourage you to join us as well at 530-265-9555, 1-800-355-5867. Let me take this opportunity to somehow bridge, I guess, a gap. And I received a phone call while we were at break, and I am told that the library, contrary to what was being said on our last segment, actually does carry The Nation, Z Magazine, and also has at least one of Howard Zinn's books in their catalog. I'm talking about the Nevada County Library. What I was told, which is completely unconfirmed, is that the reason these materials were not accepted by the library that we were talking about, these various magazines, was simply a matter of storage. So I just want to say that. I was requested to say that. I will, and we'll go to the library tomorrow and find out if these things are really there, and if they're there, great. Jim, let me ask you, and I guess perhaps kick off this portion of our program. The reason I was motivated to call was as a result of a letter that was printed in the Union newspaper, and I'm sure you know which letter I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
If you didn't see it, it's going to be really kind of hard to describe it.
Yeah, I saw it, and it's about one of the students who attends Magnolia School, which is located in the Pleasant Ridge School District. So I'm very familiar with the situation.
Oh, and I know you are. And what I was talking about was our audience. And not so much the critique of social promotion, but the actual photocopy of the note that was printed in the Union that was allegedly written by a student. It was one of the absolute most horrendous examples of writing that I have ever seen in my life. I mean, would you agree on that?
You may have seen worse.
I don't know.
We see a lot of kinds of student work over the years. I've been in public education in this county, in Nevada County, since 1968. This is 69, so about 31 years. I have been superintendent of Pleasant Ridge School District since 1976. I think it'd be good for your audience to locate geographically the Pleasant Ridge School District here in Nevada County, which is everything south of the Golden Chain Motel on Highway 49, extending down to the Bear River Bridge. Pleasant Ridge School District is the largest elementary school district in Nevada County, serving about 2,100 students in four schools, three elementary schools and one intermediate school, that being Magnolia Intermediate. a little bit about the school district. It's probably in geographically in this area, philosophically, is probably the most conservative area with the greatest amount of religious influence. People of church going, fairly fundamental group and as related to school and community orientation. That's not exclusively, but I'd say as in comparison with other areas in Nevada County, we are probably labeled the traditionalist and the more conservative area in our public schools systems.
Well, that was going to really leave me wide open to come off with a really bad joke, and I'm really glad I restrained myself.
I just want to give the audience to be somewhat familiar where I'm coming from as related to being a longtime superintendent serving in such an area.
Sure, and I understand that, and I know Chama wants to get in on this as well, and I'm sure Paul will, and perhaps our audience will as well, but I really want to kind of get back to focusing on this note that was, as I understand it, allegedly written by an eighth grade student. Was that it?
The article was, I thought, was actually written in the paper. I'm sorry, and
it was good,
but yeah. It was great.
But we're talking about two different things.
It made an important point. Now, the note itself was not written by the student that the article was about.
You know this to be a fact.
Yes, it was written by a friend, as the article pointed out.
Okay.
It was a friend of a child who this is the parent of, and this student who actually wrote the note that appeared in the paper is not in regular education at Magnolia School. It's in a special program.
Okay, then let me see if I have this right. Now, when you say a special program, what special program are we talking about?
Because the fact we're on a public radio and so on, I don't want to go too descriptive of this individual because we get close to identifying the child. Let's put it this way. It was in a program for which the child is in a class of about serving about 7 to 8 kids and students and receives a great deal of individual one-on-one attention because a learning, behavioral, or other dysfunction.
So you feel that this was not representative of the work of some of the students there?
No, obviously it was not.
Okay, because certainly I believe the way it was represented, and I think probably the way most people were taking that, was that here was a representation of what was happening in school, whereby young people with this just absolutely god-awful command of writing and the English language were being promoted out of school simply because it was deemed that they were no longer young enough to be in that school and just being pushed through the system.
Well, I still think that's a relevant question, but it's that particular note, I think, is an extreme in terms of special kinds of incidents that occurs with students who have learning disabilities or other problems in schools and does not represent really what I think the society or public is talking about in terms of this practice, social promotion.
I heard the program that you did with Terry McAteer yesterday. It was a very interesting thing that you were talking about. And what you were talking about was the fact that if you hold these children back for too long, where they're not really around people of their own age, eventually this causes more harm than good. In other words, is that accurate to describe this? In other words, if you can flunk. Okay, we'll use the word flunk. That's the old word. You can flunk out of fourth grade. So all your mates that you went to fourth grade with are over to fifth grade now, and you're in fourth grade. And then you flunk again, and then pretty soon your contemporaries are in sixth grade, and you're still in fourth grade, but you might flunk the sixth grade. So what I heard you saying was that this actually inhibits the potential of this person learning more than it does help them. And they're better off staying somewhat with their own age group as they proceed through their educational process. Is that accurate?
Well, I think what we're saying is that I think it's the research tells us, and regardless of what kind of school system you're talking about, is that if a student is flunked or retained two or more times in his educational career, there's virtually a certainty to drop out of school.
Right.
So so the student's not around anymore to help.
Sure.
And leaves the system with those dysfunctional skills.
Maybe the concept of grades is wrong. Maybe the idea is that the education process, say, instead of saying I'm a 16-year-old in fourth grade or something like that should be changed as if to say, I'm a 16-year-old receiving an education, not necessarily having a grade stamped on him that he is. Do you understand what I'm saying here? Mm-hmm. Because I think I agree with you, actually. I do think I agree with you that you can only hold people back so much, but why? What's this thing about grades? You know, the grade in school that you're in, why is that even important?
Well, I think in this particular case, in terms of social promotion, I think the issue is not grade-driven, it's skill-based. Yeah. You know, I think people are not concerned about whether the kid gets A, B's, and C's in the fourth grade. Mm-hmm. Does he know anything as a fourth grader? Can he do fundamental, rudimentary kind of educational skills? And does being in a fourth grade stand for be able to perform at some level of reading, writing, and arithmetic? It's not necessarily whether you got a C in a class. Did you really actually learn the math? In the fourth grade, do you know multiplication tables? Can you apply it? Can you go to the store with your parents? Can you help them shop? Can you apply those skills that you're learning not only in the classroom, but can you apply them outside in the real world? I think that's essentially what the community is asking through a lot of things in terms of legislation and so on that's being enacted in Sacramento, and that's what the question is being raised at the schools.
Chamba, you wanted to get in on this?
Yeah, and my comment was going to be pretty much what you've just said. My question to you is, what is the function of our educational system? Because my understanding is that it's exactly as you've said. It's to prepare people for life. And my question would be how you feel about that, what you feel is the function of an education system. And a part of that question is, how much freedom do you have? And how much does the state or federal government mandate what direction you should take as far as educating our youth?
Well, the question in terms of what is the responsibility of the public school system is, you know, that's a pretty broad question. I could probably go on and debate that for hours. But essentially what we're trying to do at the Pleasant Ridge School District and like public education, I think our fundamental responsibility is to educate a child in things such as reading, writing, and arithmetic, and to have educational skills. Okay. Now, that doesn't mean, I mean, we got a lot of responsibilities. I mean, society over the years have said, hey, we're not being successful here with a child, so we'll turn some of that responsibility over to school, all the way to the feeding them lunches and dinners and supervision and all kinds of other things. But fundamentally, what society is starting to hold is what the state of California and the local community is holding us more and more accountable for is not what the kid had for lunch, but whether he can read, write, and do simple arithmetic.
Okay.
And they're employable and be able to sustain themselves beyond the school years.
We're talking with Jim Meshward, who is the superintendent of the Pleasant Ridge School District. My name is Mike Thornton. This is the New Storm News Service, co-hosted by Paul Emery. We're joined by Chamba Lane this evening, 19 minutes past the top of the hour. That hour is 9 p.m. You are tuned to Community Supported Radio, KVMR-FM, Nevada City, Auburn, Sacramento, 89.5, 99.3, 103.7 on your FM radio dial, and worldwide on the internet at www.kvmr.org. The numbers in the studio, 530-265-9555, 1-800-355-5867. We're discussing education and social promotion. Jim, let me ask you a question, because I guess there are two things. One is, what is the statistics for high school dropouts here in the area?
I'm a superintendent of an elementary school district, so we do not. It goes to kindergarten through the eighth grade. So within my professional responsibility, I do not not responsible for the high school. But we were recently meeting with the high school, and I think that the number that I heard, and this is subject to correction, is around 14%, which is one of the highest in Northern California.
For retaining, you mean?
No, that's for dropout.
That 14% is one of the highest, so we have one of the highest dropout rates, is what you're
saying?
That's
my understanding, yes.
Well, then let me ask you this, if that's the case, okay, and once again, we can be corrected if that turns out to be the case. If we're saying that social promotion is designed to stop dropout rates or to curtail people dropping out of school, and we have the highest rate of people dropping out of school, I mean, because it seems to me that, you know, if
something
how can working. The kid how can the kid do the work, you know, and increasingly when we're talking about holding them to tougher and tougher standards, but yet they're being pushed up in grade. And forget whether, you know, we want to call them grades or not. how can they do the work? It almost sounds to me that they're not. They're failing and dropping out in record numbers.
Well, I don't know if I would agree with that. I still think that, you know, statistically, that the older you make a child in school and non-peer-related, you know, which social promotion would promote or result in, that you're increasingly in the likelihood that the child isn't going to remain within the school environment.
Okay, but we already have the highest dropout rate.
Yeah, but that's only about 15%, 14%.
Well, you know, but it's the highest.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's my logic train, but it seems to me that what one could say is as the work gets more complicated, as the demands get more stringent, that the student is really less capable of doing the work because they don't have the foundation for doing the work.
Well, the other side of that coin is that potentially we get higher dropout rates because we have higher standards and higher levels of expected performance.
Okay.
You know, I remember listening to, it might have been KPFA or it might have been a different radio station. It was a discussion with elementary school teachers and I believe a principal of an elementary school in the Bay Area. And they were talking about the fact that in the midst of all the criticism of our school system, the shining examples of children that go to school and learn at a tremendous rate and in an incredibly thorough way is the children of first-generation Oriental immigrants, Vietnamese and immigrants from Thailand and from China and from the Philippines, I do believe. First-generation immigrant families. Now, these teachers were saying that these children come into the schools, they can't even speak English when they're in the first grade. But by the second and the third grade, they are the top of their class. Now, and just learning everything that the teachers put out there. Now, here is the question. And I'll use the rather blunt language as it was expressed on there. Maybe the problem isn't in our education system. Maybe the problem is that we have basically dumb, uninterested kids. What do you think of that concept?
Well, I wouldn't agree. I think in terms of, I think the students, you know, Asian students and first generation have an extraordinary record of success.
Well, why is it that they can go to the same school that other children go to that just can't handle it and can't make it? Now, obviously, the school system must be doing something right for these children who are motivated. Motivation is the word. So maybe it's not the system, maybe it's the children, maybe it's the families.
There's some cultural differences, obviously, that exist in the students' lives, the support system, the home, the demand and priority and the emphasis is placed on public education or in education as a whole. And certainly those children in the public schools or in schools reflect that culture that is instilled into home.
Lest we become too racist, I think that the situation you're describing, the phenomena you're describing, has been true throughout America, that no matter what the origins were of the immigrants, they had a tremendous impetus and interest in succeeding in their new country, and they made sure that their kids did the best possible job they could in school. So it's not a racist thing. It's a phenomena of when you're new to the country, this is the way you get your toehold. And the parents have been tremendously supportive of that, and they're tremendously supportive now. And again, before we get too hung up in statistics, we live in a rural county, and there are a lot of parents in this county who, for one reason or another, don't think the school system is such a great thing and don't particularly encourage their children to do well. And I think a lot of kids drop out because they not only don't have the support to stay in school, they might have just the opposite. Well, a lot of kids feel like they're just doing time.
Yeah, but I think it's important that we indicate that public schools in Nevada County do extraordinarily well by comparison. Say we just got the STAR test back, and you know, all the school districts, and we again scored second highest scores reading, writing, arithmetic, and virtually all grades, second to Marin County in terms of total performance and as measured statewide, and it wasn't even close. There is no other county outside of Marin that even compares with the educational achievements that go on in the schools here in Nevada County.
Reading, writing, arithmetic.
Well, that's correct. That's the only thing that's measured by the statewide scores, well, test.
I just wonder because there are two thoughts that come to my mind. One is, wasn't there just some problems with a test that was being brought out of Texas? I understand that there's just a great hubbub about this test being misscored or whatever. We're not talking about the same test. I mean,
yes,
I understand that the test is almost completely discredited.
No, it's not. That controversy and why there was a fine levied against the test publisher, Harcourt and Brace, as related to the scoring and the separation of limited English speaking scores from that of the general population. And they did not do that correctly. It had nothing to do with the scoring of the tests of this individual student results. It was the comparison of the results, so you break out so we can fairly compare a district. For example, in Nevada County, it's not fair to say, hey, the students in Nevada County did so wonderfully when we virtually have a very high socioeconomic index, virtually no minority populations in our school. And if you go down and say, well, it's great, we beat the heck out of some school in San Juan Queen Valley where 90% of the kids can't speak English. You know, that's not a fair comparison.
Mm-hmm,
and so
I
what
agree.
The state was intending to do in the state is say, let's try on these test results is to compare apples with apples and oranges with oranges. And they botched that in terms of their initial reporting the results to the state of California. The error and the problems wasn't in the individual student scores. It was in terms of how do we fairly compare the test scores throughout the state of California.
We're talking about education and social promotion. Our guest is Jim Meshwart, superintendent of the Pleasant Ridge School District. Paul?
I'm going to repeat the story that I actually told over the when I phoned into the radio show when you were on with Terry McIntyre, because this is a good story.
And you tell them when.
Not all the time. This is just a good story, so it doesn't necessarily mean anything. Okay, when I was I went to grammar school for almost 4 years in a small town in Oklahoma, Altus, Oklahoma, to be exact, and they had an education system there that was totally intact and unchanged for probably 30, 40 years before that. In that. The tests were the same. The teachers were the same. They teach at the same school until they died. And the function of education was the same in that basically eighth grade was it. That's as far as you really needed to go to school to have the skills that you needed in that culture, in that society, to go out and to earn a living and to do your
whatever
job.
People did in Oklahoma.
Right. Which was basically agricultural work and farm work and things such as that. All right. I was in the sixth grade. And all of a sudden, we've been going to school with the same kids for about 2 or 3 years before that. They found these kids out there somewhere on a farm, okay, that hadn't been to school for several years. And they were about 18 years old. And probably the last time that they were in school was in fifth or sixth grade. They found them. And they put them in our classroom. So all of a sudden these big kids arrived in our classroom that they sort of wrestled in there from the farm and put them in our classroom because that's where they were supposed to go to school. It was quite a shock to the rest of us there. And they didn't last very long. They didn't stay very long because they but that was the level of education that was interpreted that they needed to be at. So I don't know what to do with young people who no longer keep up with the flow that they're supposed to be part of, because you can't just keep them in the same grade indefinitely just because they don't learn. So I don't know if you call that social promotion or what. I think that's what the original topic was. It's a very difficult situation. The real question is, what do you do with children that are uninterested in school, and what do you do with families that really don't care? They really don't care. I don't know.
Well, doesn't at some point, though, the question become that we're going to have to pay attention to these people at some time? I mean, we're living in a society, in a culture, in an economic system that demands a higher and higher level of education just to get by. I mean, you know, there was a day in Oklahoma where, you know, if you knew how to count your change at the store, you know, you could probably figure out a way to earn a fairly decent living. Now what you wind up with are a bunch of people who can barely add or write or read in a society that's demanding such a level of technological sophistication that I mean, these are our future prison populations.
Well, I think you're making a good point, Mike, because you know, a lot of the advocates for this new legislation and the new directives towards schools on social promotion are trying to remember the good old days when they were in school, and then if you didn't pass certain tests that you didn't get promoted. You know, and people forget that back 30 or 40 years ago when you and I were in school, that if you were a high school dropout or even got an eighth grade diploma, which is sometimes we still go through the ceremonial deal of having eighth grade graduation, sure, get a diploma, and that's left over from years ago when eighth grade was a respectable departure point from school. And you left school sometimes without a diploma, without a whole lot of functioning skills, but there were good blue-collar jobs out there for which you could sustain, right, yourself. You know, there were a lot of good union, auto workers, all kinds of things that people could get into those professions and support themselves and their families and their children very well for life. And even failing that, there was the good old military. The Army would pick you up and help you be all that you can be. And now you can't even get in the military in this country unless you can functionally read and write and have a high school diploma. So there aren't those options. You're making a good point. So one of the things that's very difficult for us to do is to really pursue an active policy that's going to put more kids out on the street, because one of the things that are increasingly being placed on demands on schools is greater accountability for student performance. And we can raise that performance level and have higher expectations, but the community and our society is going to have to be willing to take some casualties along the way. And that's serious.
Well, when you say take some casualties along the way, and I know Chamba wants to say something, and Paul, and we also have to get to upcoming shows. Mm-hmm. I would really like you to explain that a little bit more when you say take some casualties along the way. What do you mean by that?
I mean, I'm serious. I mean, in terms of if we take, if we can do that in schools, we can say that, hey, in high school you have to pass this exit exam. If you don't pass it on the first or second try, so what? You're out. You're not going to get a high school diploma. Or we can force kids out to hang around in the 7th and 8th grade and 9th grade and so on for longer than they're willing to do so, and then they find other things to do. With or without our permission. And with or without the community's permission. And so more and more kids we put out there don't have the kind of prerequisite skill to be successful for a lot of the reasons you were articulating a few minutes ago, I would define those as casualties, because they are going to be wards of society for almost life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something you just can't call up the school and say, how come you're not promoting these kids? And I mean, how come you are promoting these kids? We want you to hold these kids accountable and mean something about being in fifth grade and so on. It's just not that easy.
Right.
And I think the focus, and focus to somewhat in terms of the legislation, is back on, if we're not educating these kids now, how can we? Because we can't afford to lose any child. And I don't care what the situation is home. I don't care what the background is, the situations and all the kinds of things that they have coming from, the obstacles they may have in their life. We in the public school systems are going to have to do a better job of reaching out and making those and holding and teaching those kids those skills. What we have done, and the high school has been very good at in previous years, is go out and create alternative ed classes. But really, the standards in those alternative ed classes are a lot much lower than is going on with the student in the general population that continues to remain in the comprehensive high school. That's not going to work, and we got to find new ways of meeting the needs of those kids.
Chamba,
I'd like to broaden our focus. So far, we've been talking about reading, writing, and arithmetic, and we've been talking about training people essentially for the job force. And it seems to me that the most important function that any child is going to go through when they get out of the system is they're going to be a parent, and they're going to have to interact with other human beings. And my concern is, and I'd like your opinion on this, how much are we preparing them for life other than reading, writing, and arithmetic? How much are we preparing them to be, if at all, to be good parents and conflict resolution skills, interpersonal communication skills? How much does the system that you're involved in value that, and what's your personal opinion?
That's a role, or my opinion is that I think we do a fairly good job of it, but we're not prepared for all the social dilemmas that exist in a community that wind up on the school grounds. And I think one of the things that happened back in April, the tragedy in Littleton, Colorado, has pointed out the necessity of talking about what you're talking about. It doesn't matter what kind of school you are, what kind of environment and situation you are. We got some problems in terms of in this country and our sort of society in terms of how people relate to each other. You know, one of the things that we're going to do with the Pleasant Ridge School District, specifically at Magnolia School starting in the fall, is that we're going to expand some counseling services. And it's going to, under the terminology, because it's included in the funding legislation of conflict resolution. But we're not going to go out and find a canned conflict resolution program and teach that to everybody. I think one of the things that we're concerned about coming out of the Colorado situation and tragedy was that we're finding an increased hostility on the school grounds among peer groups. I almost find, excuse me for using this term, but I almost find it a tribalization of the play yard.
Okay. Can you explain that a little further?
And that students are more closely banding together. The jocks were the jocks, and the skaters were the skaters, and the nerds were the nerds, and and it used to be it was kind of live and let live.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now it's kind of antagonism. If people are not like you, we feel more confident. We feel more powerful. That somehow or another that. We're not as tolerant as the other people on the school board that are not like us. And I think we have some responsibility to address that.
We're talking with Jim Meshward, who is the superintendent of the Pleasant Ridge School District, and we're talking about all types of different facets of education. My name is Mike Thornton. This is the New Storm News Service, co-hosted by Paul Emery, as always. You're tuned to community-supported radio, KVMR-FM, Nevada City, Auburn, Sacramento, 89.5, 99.3, 103.7 on your FM radio dial. We'd like to take this opportunity to let you know about some of the upcoming programs that you can hear here on community radio.
Saturday at midnight, this week's guest on Local Motion will be Sacramento singer-songwriter Hannah Lindgrell. Then at 1 a.m., stay tuned for Quark, Strangeness, and Charm, where we'll go on a musical journey about Nostradamus, the solar eclipse, and the end of the world as we know it.
Okay. Some of Germany's biggest corporations used slave labor during World War II. They were forced to work by companies like Volkswagen while their babies died in filthy Kinderheims. Now, it's payback time. We'll talk with Attorney General Mike Hosfield about the Holocaust class action suit and proposed upcoming billion-dollar settlement. Also, the federal government has declared Central California a high-density narcotics trafficking zone. We'll discuss what this means for them and us with Sheriff Keith Royal and narcotics detective Mike Hansen on your show, Mike. Full logic reversed.
Boy, the way you just threw that over to me, that was so professional. On the next Tibetan Radio Hour, our guest will be Sitin Fanucharis. See, I didn't throw that one to you. Founding member of the Los Angeles Friends of Tibet and one of the first Tibetans to attend university in the United States way back in 1964. That's on the Tibetan Radio Hour, Friday, August 6th at noon.
And the sweet dream continues. Join Paul Emery and Jerry Ann Van Dyke for a special look at the life and sweet dreams of Roy Buchanan's Soulful Sounds next Thursday on The Morning Show. The legendary guitarist Roy Buchanan stunned, puzzled, and intimidated other fine guitarists. His influence on the sounds we hear today are yet to be made known. A show any musician wouldn't want to miss. That's next Thursday morning, 8:30 to 10 a.m. right here on KVMR Morning Show.
And I'm looking forward to that. The next Friday morning show, which is tomorrow morning, will feature Brazilian singer-songwriter Badi Assad. And she'll join Joseph about 8:20 a.m. and talk about her new recording, Chameleon, which some are saying is the best recording of the year. That's tomorrow on the morning show.
from the redwood forest to the New York Island, from the poppy fields of Asia Minor to the blue Canadian Rockies, places have inspired countless songs. Tune in for this Saturday's cameo appearance from 4 to 6 p.m. when New York Mike presents a lesson in musical geography 101. I think the poppy fields of Asia really inspired John Coltrane.
That certainly got my attention.
It certainly got my attention, too. You bet.
I'm going to read this as long as I get to speak first when we get back into the program.
You can do that. And I'll tell you what. Now, I want you to know that Paul Emery is holding an upcoming show card hostage. Paul, put the gun down and step away from the upcoming show card.
Okay, on Monday night, August 9th, come into KVMR Soul Kitchen on the Oldies Show. We'll be cooking up a tasty soul stew from 10 to midnight. Join your musical chef, Steve Cagle, as he serves up some of the finest soul, funk, and R&B from the 60s and 70s. That's the Oldies Show, Monday night at 10 p.m.
The Other Side, August 10th from 10 p.m. to 12 a.m., Legends of Lounge and Exotica, series number 15, Les Baxter. Perhaps the most renowned name in lounge music, Les Baxter has the distinction of being the man who truly started the Exotica craze of the 50s and 60s. Tune in to the perfect treat for a hot summer's night. Take it away, Paul.
Yes. Okay. Here's something I'd like to talk about just a little bit. My wife is a teacher at the Yuba River Charter School, which is the Waldorf inspired charter, which is the idea of what charter schools are is present different educational philosophies. That particular school is largely based on the educational philosophy of a man, Rudolf Steiner, who originated Waldorf education around 1920. Rudolf Steiner says something very interesting, and he did not believe in government education. Okay, and sometime I like to really get into that topic a lot. And what he had to say was, education is not a function of government. Education is a function of culture. So I'm going to throw that question out to you. When you start talking about schools substituting, being a substitute for what a culture or a family or a community's responsibility for teaching. And there's a tremendous responsibility that a community has towards teaching its children. If more and more and more of this gets shoved into the schools, first of all, I don't know if this can really be done by the schools. Secondly, I don't know if it's a good idea if they do it, because what standards are the schools going to assume in their teaching? Could you comment on that?
Well, first of all, in terms of your comment in terms of Steiner, in terms of he believed in terms of schools, government had no role in schools. It's interesting the Yuba River Charter School is funded by government funds.
That is the contradiction, and I will not argue that. I will not argue that. But let's get beyond that. I concede that.
But in terms of, you have a believer in the fact that I'm of the personal persuasion, and it's also, I think, it reflects the philosophy of the Pleasant Ridge school community, is that we don't believe the schools ought to in any way, shape, or form substitute the role of a family and the parents.
Or a community?
That's correct.
So if you are asked to do things like teach children how to get along with each other, is this the job of a school? I mean, I think it's terribly unfair to place this increasing burden on our schools.
Well, I think that, in to some degree, you're right. You know, in terms of our particular community, rejects values clarification or anything that where the school is overtly, I mean, is just simply taking over the role of the parents and teaching students values and et cetera. But we also have a responsibility when they send 850 students to Magnolia School that we create a civilized instructional environment. And that is that when kids relate as a community and so on, that's as community in itself at school, and that they learn that how to get along. And one of the two key words that we're going to be emphasizing when the students return in a couple of weeks is two key words that I think it's should be a part of the characteristics of all kids, and that is, one, some compassion and tolerance. You know, and I think that's part of, not necessarily, I don't even think it even infringes upon the home at all. It's just simply a part of being a good person wherever you are, and particularly in terms of the light of being in school.
We're talking with Jim Meshward, who is the superintendent of the Pleasant Ridge School District. There are two things, Jim, that I'm thinking about when you're speaking. One is, there's a practical reason for this whole issue of conflict resolution, and in particular putting in light of the Columbine shooting, in the fact that there have been analysis done by police departments. I've seen a copy of it. A community such as this is prime for that type of activity. In fact, that type of activity is happening in communities like this all across the country. The demographics, the geographics, all of it makes the Nevada County area a prime possible point for something like Columbine to happen. I mean, this has been studied by police chiefs. Mm-hmm. You may be aware of the study.
Yes,
I
am. We recently had a meeting with Sheriff Royle and the police chiefs of Nevada County and presented the study to us. And yeah, we were the prototype. I mean, in terms of the major shootings that went on in Oregon, Washington, Arkansas, Kentucky, and then Colorado, they're all in very much communities similar to ours.
So position of wanting to do a program or seeing a program of this as of value is not some sort of, for lack of a better term, some sort of airy-fairy, oh, let's all get along. I mean, there's an actual practical base that the evidence shows that this community is a prime possible point for a repeat of Columbine or Kentucky or Arkansas because the demographics and the geographics are almost identical. And police have talked with school officials about this.
Yes.
Right. The other thing that comes to my mind when you're speaking, many of the things that you were talking about parents getting upset about the school usurping their rights and duties, seem to come very often from the very kind of ultra-conservative types of families and ultra-conservative religious families that it sounds like your school district, by what you were saying, primarily serves. And perhaps ultra, I shouldn't have used that word. That was a little bit of an embellishment on my part.
You know, I was listening to the program that you were conducting in the previous segment, and one of the things that occurred to me when I was listening is that how much what we call the liberal community and conservative community have in common.
Absolutely.
What struck me in that when you asked this question is that, one of the things the conservative community said, leave the values at home. And you're there to teach reading, writing, and arithmetic. But what we find, in particularly in our own community, up in the Ridge, in Twin Ridges School District, is already up to 10, growing to 12 charter schools. And it's essentially parents getting together to take their kids under their own wing and educate their kids within a certain philosophical point of view, mm-hmm. with the students who are like-minded and approach public in the form of education. I mean, that's not a whole lot of difference than the people on the right or the religious right forming private religious schools.
I'm not trying to make anybody bad here. I'm just saying.
You way to phrase the question was something about that was kind of inherent characteristic of conservative kinds of families who are saying, hey, school, stay out of our family life.
Let me say that perhaps
it's broader base, right, and that we see it. You know, the greater phenomenon where we actually to some extent the liberal part of our community in this very community is saying we don't even want our kids to be any part of the public school program, and we're going to go out under the charter law and create our own institutions.
And perhaps what I really should have said in a better way of saying it would have been that more often than not, when you hear those types of views put forth in the majority of media in our country, seem to be coming from what would normally be labeled, or more often be labeled, sort of, religious right, kind of right conservative, politically oriented, socially oriented groups. Yeah, that's what I should have said.
Right. And I want to say, in terms of the Pleasant Ridge School District's approach to this, it's not necessarily any philosophical or political viewpoint. We just simply have the greatest respect for the families and the parents of our community.
I'm not saying that you're doing anything you're doing
and
for
we,
those
and
reasons.
And we try, as a government official, I'm one of the highest paid government officials in Nevada County. I might be one of you know, top two or three.
Well, good
you know,
for
and,
you.
And I, when I'm saying that is that schools are government, you know? And one of the things we say is, you know, when I had children in public schools in Nevada County, and I don't want the government raising my kids. And I don't think that's a conservative statement, liberal statement. You know, I want to be a parent. I want my wife to be a parent. I want to have a family. And I don't want the institution of the schools and so on, or government in any way, shape, or form, to have undue influence over how my child develops. I want to send my child to school. And the expectation is they do what I don't do well, and that is to teach my students to be educated, to coexist, to get along, and be able to assume in a positive, supportive place in our society.
You know, Jim, I cannot agree with you more on that philosophy. And the situation is that it is not the job of the schools to teach core values. This is the job of the family to teach those values. And if the families don't do it, we're in big trouble.
If we rely
on an institution to do that, a government institution, we are in big, big trouble.
Well, I got to jump in here.
Jump in then.
Okay. All of that's very nice. And if we look at the society that we're living in and America today, there's a lot of families that for one reason or another can't do that or aren't doing it. And just as a citizen, I'm delighted that we have with us an educator here that says that they're going to include teaching compassion and tolerance, which have nothing to do with joining the labor force. It ain't reading, writing, arithmetic. I'm delighted that the school system is willing to take that on. I think it's vitally essential.
Yeah, I do too. Otherwise we're educating the kids that just simply will have no use for society anywhere. They're just going to go out and do other things that disrupt what all the rest of us are trying to accomplish.
I think it's vitally important. I'd like to carry that one step further and go back to a previous question. Why isn't the school system also training them to be parents? It's probably the most important job they're going to do in their lives.
Because if you bring up anything to do with sex or raising kids, people go nuts.
Because why don't parents teach their children how to be parents?
Because the parents don't know how to be parents.
Well, then you're making an assumption, Chamba.
True.
That you're making an assumption. And I always thought you were kind of a conservative kind of guy. You didn't believe in this big government taking over. Now you're saying the big government should be involved in teaching people how to be parents. I mean, I don't understand where that's coming from, because you have to somehow arrive at a philosophy of what a proper role of government is. And if the families don't do it, then I don't think it's the job of the
school. I think one of the things, if you ask the public schools to do something, you better be prepared. You better ask whether they're prepared to do
right.
it and do it well.
And you better be prepared as a society to support them in doing it.
I'm not sure, give them
what they need to do.
Right. I'm not sure I would represent that the Pleasant Ridge School District, starting with the superintendent, is prepared to hold kids accountable and to teach reading, writing, and arithmetic. I think we do that very, very well. But to take on the responsibility to ensure that kids grow up to be good parents, I'm not confident that myself or the staff of the school district are really trained to do that very well.
I need to jump in here because we are coming up very, very quickly to the end of this program. Let me first let you know that the opinions you heard in this radio broadcast are those of the people who spoke them. They do not necessarily reflect the opinions of KVMR, its board of directors, management staff, underwriters, volunteers, or other contributors. Thanks to those of you who are listener supporters for underwriting all hours of programming on this independent alternative media endeavor that is community radio. We appreciate your support. Jim, we just have a couple of minutes. Let me remind the listeners that we've been speaking with Jim Meshwert, superintendent of the Pleasant Ridge School District, about education and its many facets. A final thought for our audience that you'd like to leave them with? We'll give you the last word.
Well, first of all, I appreciate this. I kind of hang out in different quarters in terms of probably what's going on in the minds of the listening officers, your listeners out there. I think, we started off with the purpose of the program tonight is talk about social promotion, and we did very little of that. And I think that probably because we have a central agreement, and it was a new place to go. But I think one of the things that we found today is that there's a lot more that we can we have a lot more in common than we have in terms of differences in terms of the community, and therefore, I have some problems with some of the tendency of this community to continue to divide the educational system. I know that there was a charter school meeting here since we branched off
go ahead.
Their branch off the other day, last summer, when they were talking about a charter high school affiliated with a high school district and to do their own thing. And I went to that meeting. I didn't speak, but I was not offended as a public school educator. I was offended as a parent. And what I heard was a lot of really neat people in this community with different kinds of kids other than my children that I could sit there and say, it's too bad that these people want to go off and form their own school. I would very much like to have those kids in the class with my kids. So that tolerance and compassion, and we're not going to achieve that or accomplish that if we split kids off to various school systems out there that all have common interest. And we don't put people that think differently, are coming from different cultural backgrounds, have different ideas, different ways of solutions, and so on. And we're not going to teach them to get along unless we put them in the same school building. And therefore, I really personally believe kind of a big tent approach to education, whether it's public, private, or any other sort. And I just want to part with that by saying that that's probably one of the disturbing trends that I see in Nevada County, despite our success. I would really encourage for the people in this community to think about, putting the kids together for the purpose of education, not splitting them apart.
Jim Meshworth, superintendent of the Pleasant Ridge School District, thank you for coming in and joining us in our program this evening. We just have 1 minute left. I want to thank Chamba for coming and staying with us this evening.
My pleasure.
Paul, make your final thing, because we got to go.
This is my winger. I completely disagree with you on that, by the way, because I believe in the voucher system. I believe it's time for big government. It's time for government to get out of the education business. It's big business. It's big money. And it's time that the community, that the families and the community, meaning micro, small communities of people who believe in something similar. I believe the families take the responsibility of educating their children, and that it's time that we do that. And I think the voucher system is the way to go.
And perhaps we'll have to have a program discussing that.
I like doing that at the end of a program.
And you're really good at it, too. And what we're going
to
have to do...
We'll put them in contact with a Walmart Corporation, which is looking in and get into the voucher school business.
I don't even want to go there. We're out of here. That's it for this edition of the program. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. If you're interested in copies of this or other Full Logic Reverse programs, you can contact us via email at flr@jps.net or by telephone at area code 530-265-9462. Full Logic Reverse is produced at FLR Studios in Nevada City, California, USA. Our music is by Rick Payne. We hope you'll join us next time for another edition of Full Logic Reverse.